I just can't resist. I've got to tell you a little bit about an ongoing chapter in our lives, in our family. It doesn't happen too often, but as a matter of fact, this is the first time for me. I confess I've been a father. I know what that's like, but it's been a long time since a baby has played an important role in my life, although children are very important to us, but not quite like having one that is your own. Now, don't jump to any conclusions there. I'm not a father again, but I am, of all things, a lucky grandfather. I have had the privilege this past week, actually overwhelming privilege, of sitting in a room with four generations of our family. And you know, it's the kind of thing you read about and you think about it, and yet when you're doing it, there's just a feeling that I don't know if I can adequately describe it. It just is almost overwhelming. And as I sat in the hospital room, having already embraced this cute, cuddly, sweet-smelling, at least for now, little girl named Michaela Nicole Peterson, it was overwhelming. She weighed in at about 7 pounds, 11 ounces, just a little, just so tiny. And yet she was a little bit larger than I thought she was going to be. And, you know, you just look at that and you think, oh, my. Oh, my. And you think, a miracle. Another miracle. All of us are different, and I know that. Men are different. But over the years, I'm one of these guys that if I go to the hospital to visit and, you know, someone who's ill, if I even get close to the baby ward, I can't resist the temptation to go look. You know what I'm saying? And you pull up to that window and you look in there and here are all these little bassinet type things, little carriers. And some of them are blue and some of them are pink. And you sort of look in there and you stare and you say, well, I wonder what's going on here today. And there'll be a child or two or three in there. And it's just staggering when you think about that. But then to be pulled into a room voluntarily to make sure that your daughter is okay. That was of great importance, of course. But then also to recognize the passing of life. And to be in the room with four generations. Now, some of you in this audience today, I think probably five generations. Am I speaking out of turn? Any five generations here? Anybody got five generations? Anita, how about you? You've got four. With this wedding coming up, maybe have five if they hurry. We'll see. But four generations. All right, well, so I'm in good company here today. And all of you who have had grandchildren, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. It was a sober reflection for me because here was this little child that one minute was in the safety and comfort and the privacy of its mother's womb, of her mother's womb, and next minute she's in the world. And she's given the breath of life that makes her a human being with the same possibilities and the same destiny that all of us have. There's just something about that, and I don't know how. I just sat back in the room, and I looked around. I didn't say too much because I was overwhelmed by it all, and I just admired the moment. But I do know that I had the privilege of picking up this cute little old cuddly girl who didn't cry a whole lot, and I was pleased about that. And by the way, it's been a long time since I've heard that piercing cry of a newborn. It's been a long time, boy. I don't know how they do that. I haven't heard it for so many years, and all of a sudden, I thought, boy, that sounds irritating. And yet it's just a natural kind of response. And so now I am glad that it's in someone else's household and not my own. But I will do my share of the babysitting, I'm sure, and try to deal with that. But it's been a long time that, I don't know, God made it that way. It gets your attention. You know. Now, Carla, Betsy and I were talking about Carla here the other day, and Betsy asked me, well, when's Carla going to deliver? And I said, I don't know, but I think she hopes to deliver soon. But I think it's clear up to August, isn't it? In September. So we're going to get to see you get more and more uncomfortable. That's what, as that child grows, you know. And I used to notice how women who are pregnant walk, you know, they start out pretty well. You know, they can walk straight, and then all of a sudden they start this kind of waddling business. And then when it's all said and done, it's... So we'll get to watch you, Carla. Now, don't let me embarrass you with that. And that little life that you have inside of you, I understand it's a little girl, if I've been told correctly, that's really wonderful. Something sweet about those girls, but something pretty good about those boys, too. But to be able to stand in this hospital room and hold this little gal in my hands and look at those little rubbery legs, and little old spindly toes, and make sure that there were 10 of this and 10 of that, and look at those beautiful, sweet eyes. I got her to open up her eyes. Yeah, old granddad did. You know, he got to talking to her, and I couldn't resist the temptation to plant a little kiss or two around, and let her know that I loved her and cared for her and said sweet things to her. But you know what I'm really looking forward to after all of this? I'm looking forward to one day when she's old enough to tell her what happened. And this is what I wanted to talk to you today, because I've just mentioned briefly the latest story in our lives, the latest chapter, if you will. And yet, it really doesn't get proper emphasis unless I have a chance to retell the story to someone who will really appreciate it. And this is what I have observed about we as human beings. We tell stories all the time, don't we? You ever think about that? Oh, we tell factual things too, but a lot of us spend time telling stories. And I think that that's good that we do, and I'm going to tell you why. But I'll tell you why right now. It's because if we have the ability and the gift to tell and to learn from transcendent stories, stories that are bigger than life, it gives us the ability to make it through life. Let me explain that to you. Let me repeat that, though. That bears repeating. By telling the transcendent stories of life, those things that are bigger than life, those who listen to them and those who tell them gain an inherent gift to be able to make it through the big moments of life when we face them. And I guarantee you, you are going to face them. Yes, telling stories is a part of the Bible. I've often noticed, without unabashedly referring to it, that Jesus tells story after story after story. And I have been known to tell a story or two. I don't mean a lie. I hope I don't tell too many of those. But I like to tell stories too, because I see that Jesus told them time and time and time again. Now, he did some other things. He prophesied. I understand all that. But I get sort of hooked on those stories, because the stories that he tells, or the stories that are told about him, are bigger than life. And they help me transcend to those moments that I face in my life. For example, when I face the inevitability of death, what am I going to fall back upon? What story will I rely upon? What concept, what truth, what belief will allow me, I hope, to go to sleep peacefully? Well, how about this one? Lazarus, come out! That's bigger than life. To me, that's bigger than life. And you want me to tell you why? Because I've never seen it. I have never seen anyone who is dead come back to life. And yet the Bible is filled with example after example of that. There's a transcendent story. It's a story that needs to be told time and time and time again, because you and I are one day going to need the strength to believe in that, to face what's inevitable. Oh, yeah, we tell the stories, and they empower us. They make us richer as individuals. So I want to talk to you today about stories. And I want you to, if you can, just for a moment or two as I'm talking, don't get lost somewhere in this, but I want you to think about your favorite stories of the Bible. Can you come up with one or two or three? Your favorite stories. Now, if you can't come up with one, I'm going to just say, why not? And if you can't come up with one, I'm going to say, you're not reading the Bible enough. If you can't come up with a story or two or three that's bigger than life from the Scripture, your well of richness is very empty. And I assure you, one of these days you may very well need one of those stories to see you through the moment. Let me tell you a story that really impacted me. It was a story involving a little girl named Ruby. She was 7 years of age, and the story was told by her counselor, who observed in a very turbulent time in our history that this little girl did something that was out of the ordinary, but he didn't know what it was, but he wanted to find out. This took place back in, the 50s and 60s, somewhere in that time when there was so much racial unrest in our country, and desegregation was an issue. But this little 7-year-old girl was escorted to school every single week, every single day, by federal marshals. That in itself would be traumatizing enough. This person, who was a counselor, observed her as she would get out of the vehicle. She would notice that she would walk out, and of course there were all sorts of racial epithets and all sorts of slurring things that were being said. We know about that dark chapter in our history that we wish would never have occurred. But she was a person, she was a pioneer to some degree. And this counselor observed this little girl named Ruby, 7 years of age, and she would get out of that vehicle, and listen to everybody and what they were saying. And she would come and she would pause for just a moment and she would lower her head. And then she would raise her head up. And then she would proceed along. She would do it day after day after day. And this counselor couldn't help but notice that. So one day, after getting to know the family, he talked to Ruby. He said, "Ruby, do you mind if I ask you what it is that you're doing when you get out of that vehicle with all this anger and all this hostility and all this emotion? What are you doing that allows you to go on?" And she said very simply and very politely, she says, "Well, really, I just say a little prayer." And he said, "What?" And she said, "I say, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing." What do you think about that? Here is a little girl who had access to a religious tradition and a religious story. And when the moment called for it, she called to mind that story and she used it and empowered her to go ahead and do what she must do. Now, I'm asking all of us to consider our religious traditions and the stories that we tell. And I fear that one day we might need them. Oh, telling stories is, there's no end of them. You know, my daughter, my second daughter, is here today. I don't mean to embarrass her, but I was thinking about an illustration which illustrates what I was talking about here to you just a few moments ago. I like to talk about when kids are born. By the way, when I was in the birthing room with Tanya here and Randy, her husband, and Grandma was there. Everybody was there. Betsy, all of us were there. And Tanya and Josh were there. And I couldn't help but notice, boy, it looked like a press conference. I mean, Roy had the video camera going. I mean, there were about two or three video cameras going, and there were flashlights going. I mean, the flashes on the cameras were going off. And I looked around, and here were all these people admiring this circumstance, as they should. And I thought, this is quite something. There's a story in this. And there was a story in that, and I've just told you a little bit about it. I remember a long time ago something that I learned that proves to me what I'm talking to you about here today. A long, long time ago, I won't tell you how old Talia was, but she had a day when she was going to be born too. And we were pretty anxious about it. And she was full term, but she just didn't want to be born. And I remember going to a little community in western North Carolina called Asheville. Actually, it was down in Brevard, a little community southwest of Asheville. And we went in there, and it was time. Mothers know when it's time, I guess. Fathers don't have any idea when it's time. They just need to get there on time. But we wheeled into that hospital room, and she just didn't want to come out of the womb. She just wanted to stay in there, Talia. Just wanted to spend a little bit of extra time, I guess, in the comfort of that womb. And she was in there crossways, which I imagine would be pretty uncomfortable for a mother. Meanwhile, being fully dilated, it was time, and the doctor could sense that it was either now or never. I was pretty uptight. Everybody in the room, we were all anxious for the child to be born. Talia just didn't want to be born, I guess. She just wanted to stay in there until the right moment. But this I will never forget, and I have told her this story. And this story gives me strength. The doctor, and I was standing in the room, I noticed that the doctor said, "I know we're in a serious situation," he says, "but I need to step out of the room for just a few moments. I'll be back shortly." And I sort of noticed it, and I didn't pay any attention because, you know, we're doing all these breathing things and trying to get this thing underway. Well, very shortly, not more than 2 or 3 minutes, the doctor comes back and boom! She fully engaged, and Talia was born into this world. Cried, the usual thing, that piercing cry that they come out with. And what I find that's transcendent about this little story is that later on, we learned from the doctor, his name was Dr. Gibb, that what he did, because of the circumstances that we were involved in, he left the delivery room and went to a private place, got on his knees, and said a prayer that went something like this: "Our Father in heaven, we have a couple here that want to have their child naturally. If you don't turn the child, I'm going to have to take her surgically." That's basically what the prayer was. And he said, "Please serve them by delivering the child." Walks out of that prayer room, walks into the birthing room, and Talia turns. To me, there's something transcendent about that story. Carla, mothers-to-be. Because when you get in that situation, what are you going to fall back upon when that baby is laying in that womb sideways or upside down or whatever they do? Hopefully there's a story or two in there that can reinforce your ability and determination to do whatever you have to do to get through the crisis. Now, what I found so interesting is, see, Talia has heard this story many, many times. And you know how it is when you hear a story. Well, yes, I do. Yeah, that's fine and all that. But you do respond to it. So a couple of years ago, actually a good many years ago, it was during the holy days, I was able to take, I think through spring break or sometime like that, take Talia with me back to this little community. And I was telling her this story because I tell her this story occasionally because I want her to know by hearing this story how important it was to me. And by telling the story, I bring the moment back to life. That's what I like about stories. You know, interrupt myself. You know, we tell fishing stories. I know Mr. Sharp and Ronnie, I see him here today. We tell fishing stories. When I hear Ronnie tell a fishing story, I may have even heard it before. But hearing it again brings it to the moment and brings it to life. All right? And I visually see it and comprehend it, and I either like it or I don't like it. Okay? We tell stories about children. We tell stories about what happens to them in the highway. We tell stories about whatever it might be, and we visually bring it to a concept, and it affects us. So I had told Talia all about this many times, and I'm sure she thought, oh, Dad, you know how kids are. They'll do that kind of thing. So here we are traveling through, of all places, Brevard, North Carolina, and just on a whim, I thought, well, let's try to find her doctor, Dr. Gibb, after all these years. So after a few phone calls, guess what? We found out he was still there. And he had relocated. Anyway, we found out where his practice was. And we drove up there, and here was this brand new building, a little brick building, and he was an obstetrician. He practiced out of there. And we came in there, and I thought, well, he's going to think I'm a wacko. You know, after all these years saying, if you don't mind, I'd like you to meet the girl that you delivered. Because in my mind, the moment that happened, him leaving the room, praying for her to be born and coming back is something I have never forgotten. And I just wanted to relate that to him. So we walked into the room, and here was a waiting room, and there were several ladies in there. I was a little bit out of place. But anyway, we walked in there, and all of a sudden, I went up to where the receptionist was, and I asked her if he might have a moment, and I explained it briefly. And then she said, well, he's busy right now, but he will be with you in a moment. I turned around, and on his wall, guess what was there? Was a big collection, not a billboard, but like a picture frame, full of all the children he had delivered. And back then, when he was delivering, Talia was not his first, but one of his very first children that he had delivered back then. And so I'm looking at all these pictures, and all of a sudden, my eyes focus down into the very middle of all of this, and guess whose picture's there? Talia's picture is on that picture board in Brevard, North Carolina, all these many years later. And I couldn't wait. I said, Talia, I said, I want you to come over here and look. And I know she came over there and saw all these little kids. And boy, you could have seen all of a sudden, bingo, when she saw her picture there, it validated Dad's story about her birth. See, that's the thing about stories and pictures. Videotapes and audio tapes, they tend to validate who we are and what we do and what we can look forward to. I want to ask you, then, what are some of your favorite Bible stories? And I was going to have a little interaction for the audience, but this way we're set up here, it's a little bit hard to do that. I want you to think about the stories that are transcendent and bigger than life for you. The ones that I have mentioned to you thus far have centered to some degree upon birth, and I will tell you, I'm not quite through with that, because I want to expand upon that just at the very tail end of our message today. There are two, I have a lot of famous stories in the Bible, there are two that I want to draw your attention to today, and I don't want you to turn there because I'm going to turn there and read them. I want you to think about your favorite stories in the Bible. These are not long, these are short stories, and I will also tell you that these are just a couple. But I'm going to tell you why they are transcendent to me at this point. I grant you, given this time next year, I probably would have a few different stories. But these are just a couple that are on my mind today and I'm going to share with you why. This first one is in Luke chapter 7, I'm reading to you, and it comes in verse 11. I have read this to you before. I want to tell you why it's transcendent for me. I'll tell you right now. In all the driving that I've been doing lately, I've done a lot of thinking about two special people. One is Ray Sanchez. The other one is Guy Melvin Carnes. Driving down the highway, and I think about Ray. And I think about the fact that I miss him. I think about our last moments with it. And his courage in the face of what he faced transcended the moment. And so because of that, this verse is one of my favorite verses in the Bible this year. It goes like this. It came to pass the day after that he, speaking of Jesus, went into the city called Nain, and many of his disciples went with him, and many people. And when he came nigh to the city, to the gate of the city, behold, there was a dead man carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow, and much people of the city were with her. And when the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her, and he said to her, "Don't weep." And he came and touched the coffin, and they that bare him stood still, and he said, "Young man, I say to you, arise." And he that was dead sat up and began to speak, and he delivered him to his mother. This is one of my favorite stories right now, because in light of what cherished members of our church have gone through, I believe in these verses. And I wish above all things that we could have kept Ray with us. But if Jesus did this, I ask you, can he do it again? And we're counting on that. See, that's a story that's transcendent. That's bigger than life. And knowing this story allows me to get through life, as well as other stories. And then another one, this is a complete change of subject for you, but for whatever reasons, it may have been because of a conversation with Mr. Sharp, but I was led to go back and take a look at something I haven't even preached about, talked about, or even referred to in probably 5, 6, 7 years, and I don't know exactly why, because it's one of the greatest miracles in the Bible. And this one comes from Joshua chapter 10. I'm going to read it to you. What a moment! And you can make out of this what you will. Verse 12. Then spoke Joshua to the Lord in the day when the Lord delivered up the Amorites before the children of Israel. And he said in the sight of Israel, he said, "Sun," S-S-U-N, "stand still. Stand you still upon Gibeon. And you moon in the valley of Ahalon." And this in verse 13. "The sun stood still, and the moon stayed until the people had avenged themselves upon their enemies. Is this not written in the book of Jasher? So the sun stood still in the middle of heaven and hasted not to go down about a whole day." In verse 14, "There was no day like that before it or after it that the Lord hearkened unto the voice of man, for the Lord fought for Israel." Wow. To me, that's quite a statement. Let me get this in my mind here. You mean that a God, our God, as Mr. Sharp and I talked about it, can suspend the laws of the universe for one day? Now, you can do with that what you want to, but what I suppose to you, that this is a transcendent story that tells me that he can do anything he wants to do. And sometimes I have to believe that to get me through one moment from the next. So what are your transcendent stories? I've got one more I want to tell you about. But first of all, let me just mention, how about Moses? There's a good one. How about Jonah? Bigger than life. How about Elijah, other than just the one I just read? And how about Lazarus, the name I already mentioned to you? You can fill in some of the stories that have meaning to you. If you go back to Exodus chapter 15, I'm not going to go back there. I just want you to listen to what I have to say today. You know the story. A tremendous miracle had taken place in Exodus 15. Actually, Exodus 14, the previous chapters. God had delivered the children of Israel. And you know what they did? They wanted to remember it, so guess what they did? They made a song out of it. They didn't want to forget it. And you know, songs help us remember those most important occasions because it gets into a rhyme and a syntax and a rhythm, and you see, you repeat it from generation to generation to generation. And so they made a song up too about their deliverance and how great God was. And we are expected and should rightfully, as it's recalled to mind, remember that story. But speaking of songs, there's one here that fits the bill today. I'm going to read just two verses from it because I couldn't help but think about this as I was entitling the sermon, you know, The Latest Story. This one says, "Tell me the old, old story." This has been around for quite a while, 1832, 1915, and through there, the fellow who authored this. And I notice in particular verse 2. Listen to what it says. Oh, but wait a minute, do we do this? Because the one story that I haven't challenged you on yet is one of the most important stories. It's your conversion. When's the last time you talked about your conversion in front of your children? Now, your children may be gone, I understand that. I particularly, it's a selfish thing on my part, but when we get together during the Days of Unleavened Bread and the Night We Much Remember, I love to hear you tell your stories of being converted, as we heard several this year, because it transcends this world. But you know, telling stories, there's a little bit of a danger there. It's like, for example, I've winced several times in years gone by when I used to do a whole lot more counseling in homes. And I've heard stories like when we're talking about their children, back to this idea of pregnancy and giving birth. And I know that it wasn't intended in a certain way, but I noticed that children, as they got older, we'd be talking about, well, how many children do you have? And the story might be told, well, I have two or three, and, well, boy, this last one I had was really an ordeal. And little ears hear that. Now, wait a minute. I want you to think about that for a moment. When you tell stories, you can count on the fact that someone's listening. Of course, God is listening, but oftentimes children are listening too, and adults are listening. But I have winced on those occasions when someone unwisely, a mother who was just tired, and I understood her tiredness, but she made comments, or the father did, that I knew would hurt that child of 4 or 5 years old who was listening to what was said about that transcendent moment. Comment might be made, "I was just so depressed when I was pregnant." And, of course, that little child knows that you're talking about being depressed when you were carrying them. If I could go back and do it again, you bet I wouldn't have any more children. What do you think that does to that little child who heard you make that kind of comment? And even this one. Well, you know, we really couldn't afford having a child. Sort of a negative connotation to this transcendent moment. I just offer that to all of you, especially you mothers who are going to have your children, to be aware that there are little ears who are always listening. And the moments you speak of are the transcendent moments. Now, I come back to our conversion, that transcendent moment. How often do you talk about that? I have determined in my personal life that I have erred and I have made a mistake in raising my daughters. I made lots of mistakes, but one mistake I made was this. I have not talked enough to them about my conversion. And in not talking to them about it, it has not seemed important. Because children respond to the things you talk about. You understand what I'm talking about? Now, for example, if I talk about a car all the time, what do they think is important? A car is important. If I talk about hunting, which I've done a lot of talking about hunting all the time, the kids know that hunting is important. But if I never talk about my conversion and my baptism in that moment of going in that cold lake out there, if I never talk about it, they think, well, it's not important. Although it really is. I need to learn to tell the story so they know just how important it is. Reminds me of these verses here. Tell me the story slowly that I may take it in, that wonderful redemption, God's remedy for sin. Tell me the story often, for I forget so soon. The early dew of morning has passed away at noon. Verse 3. Tell me the story softly with earnest tones and grave. Remember, I'm the sinner whom Jesus came to save. Tell me the story. Always, if you would really be, in any time of trouble, a comforter to me. Tell me that old, old story. So today I want to challenge you to consider the stories that you tell. And I want you to focus in on one of the greatest stories, and that is the story of your own personal conversion and your reliance upon Jesus Christ. Aren't you proud of that story? I hope you are, and I hope you find the opportunity to tell it. The final story that I would like for you to focus upon today involves the greatest story of all. It transcends everything I can think of in terms of understanding it. I accept it, but it's difficult to grapple with. This is a story of Jesus. The story of Jesus Christ and what he did. We read about it all the time. We go through the scriptures here together. And yet I wonder if we really grasp it. One verse then, James chapter 5. And if you will notice there, as we consider the example of Jesus, James chapter 5 and verse 10 simply says this. Take my brethren, the prophets. See, the Bible is full of what? All sorts of things, but it's full of lots of stories. And we are told to take these things, and it says here, my brethren, the prophets, who have spoken in the name of the Lord for an example of suffering and affliction, or suffering affliction and of patience. Behold, we count them happy which endure. Well, I just have to come right out and ask you, how do we count them happy that endure? Well, I tell you, it's difficult if these stories aren't in your mind. If you don't know these stories, so they help you transcend the moment. So if you lose your job, you have something to fall back on. Or you learn that you have cancer, you have something to fall back on. Or you learn that there is trouble in your marriage, you have something to fall back on. There must be stories that transcend the moment and give us the strength to believe in tomorrow. It goes on to say, you have heard of the patience of Job and have seen the end of the Lord, that the Lord is very pitiful. It doesn't mean, you know, like we use the word pitiful. And of tender mercy. He's very kind and of tender mercy. Do we see the end of all of that? I'd like for you to think then, as we consider the greatest story of all, the example of Jesus Christ, what it meant to his disciples, and whether or not we tell that story, because in him the story goes on. Jesus had quite a collection of guys around him, didn't he? Oh, they were much like us, pretty weak. They could be pretty strong, too. They were committed to him, but they never understood exactly what he said to them. When Jesus died, this is I am aware of, he was not a particularly old man, and he was not a particularly young man. And as a matter of fact, because of life expectancy back then, you know, he wasn't. He wasn't even middle-aged. He was getting his way on there, but he had lived a fairly lengthy life. I wish he had lived longer, however. I'm also noted, as I look at this story of his disciples, that he had limited resources, but he used them so well. Look who he hung with. You know, look at the problems of his disciples. And then I look at the women that he hung around with. I use that in the modern vernacular. And they had, as you know, some questionable reputations. But they had been forgiven of all their sins, and they had changed. While his followers would never really understand why he would have to die, we do. We do. And that's the final story I want you to hear today. I want you to hear the last story and think about this as we leave from here. It dawned on me in that hospital room with that newborn child, I wondered if my mother would be alive to see another generation. And I also wondered if I would. But I was aware of this, that life goes on. There's another chapter. The story goes on. It must be retold. As I told you before, what I'm anxious to do is to get little McKaylee on my lap one of these days when she understands and take her back to the moment that she was born and let her know how special it was. And allow that moment to transcend in her life. Because she must be the story that carries on. You know, there are so many things that happen in our church that are so inspiring. I've witnessed so many of them. Just this past weekend, I sat back in the transcendent moment and I watched a minister of our church emotionally call his daughter and his son-in-law out of the audience and bring them up to the platform where he was, or up to the front of the stage there. And with great emotion, and yet he did so well, he was privileged to lay his hands upon the two of them and appoint them to the diaconate of the church. And as I was a part of that, I thought, there's a story here. There's a story here. Someone's got to tell the story. So it's never forgotten. I also observed last past year a moment where I got to watch. I remember leaning against the doorpost of the home because the backyard was filled with all sorts of members of the Springfield, Missouri church when a grandson who had counted the cost of a minister and family and mother in the church was able to be taken to that trough and put in there as a young man. And you know what? I've wondered about that. It's probably because he heard them talk about their conversion occasionally. And he counted the cost, and it was time for him too. And so he got into that tub, and his grandfather, who's getting up there in years, was able to get down and look his grandson and son in the eye and ask him all those important questions and then immerse him in that watery grave and bring him back out. And I stood against the doorpost and I said, there's a story here. Somebody has to tell that story. And yet it dawned on me, it will be told because of the ones to whom it happened. So brethren, the story must go on. Don't you think? It will. Bronson is going to baptize, or whoever is going to do it, next weekend. He's going to baptize two or three people from what we heard today. That will be the latest story. The story will go on. Someone else will receive God's Holy Spirit. Christ is going to live in them, and if they're lucky, they will live in Christ. So, the story goes on. And all of us who are willing to keep it alive. So think about what I've said today. And think about the stories of the Scripture that transcend the moment. And you do your part, and I'll try to do my part, in keeping them alive. Because you never know who's listening.